You're listening to a podcast from 702.
So, for the moment, let's now bring you matter of fact as we look at claims that have been made in the public arena with Kate Wilkinson. Good afternoon, Kate.
Hey, Tanya.
We're entering week four. How does it feel?
It feels long. the Africa Check team was actually working from home for 2 weeks before the lockdown. So It feels even a bit longer than week four.
Yes.
But we're holding up well. Our team across the continent has sort of unique challenges.
Mm-hmm.
In Nigeria, there's been security concerns across certain areas. So our teams are grappling with that. In other countries, we have connectivity issues with, I'm sure we can all relate, power going down,
mm-hmm.
but we are working with those constraints and doing our best to make sure that there's accurate information available to everyone.
Good to hear. And that's what we'll be doing this afternoon. So you've got three particular stories that we're going to look at as part of our conversation. And our listeners, of course, are welcome to call in during the conversation, but also to raise issues, any claims that they have come across that they think need verification. Let's start with the first one, that around ICU beds in South Africa.
Mm. So I think that anyone who has been following the discussion around hospital requirements and the facilities that you need to deal with an outbreak of coronavirus in any country would have seen that ICU beds are important for people who get very severe symptoms.
Mm.
And that's because they offer ICU facilities, offer specialized care and really life support for people who are critically sick and often need support to breathe and need to use ventilators. So in any discussion about how we're going to deal with an outbreak, we need to know how many ICU beds we have available and whether they're in the public sector or in the private sector. So some of our readers were quite concerned when they saw a WhatsApp message during the rounds, which claimed that there were only 800 ICU beds in the whole of South Africa.
Hmm. That is concerning, especially when you look at where the infection is today. In South Africa, we're in the 3,000s, and where are we? 3,158, with only 903 recoveries and 54 deaths. So it does mean that quite a number of people could need this kind of life, or rather ICU support or respirator support or whatever provisions are available within an intensive care unit at any given time. And 800 for the size of our population and infection can be a source of concern. So your search for numbers then began, right, to confirm actual number of beds.
Yeah, and there's something that we say at Africa Check is that you should never say, oh, that should be easy. You know, you should never say, oh, it should be easy to figure out how many ICU beds there are in South Africa, because it's a sure way to jinx yourself. And that was the case here. You would think that figuring out how many ICU beds we have would be a relatively simple exercise, but it turned out to not be the case.
Mm.
If you did a Google search, you would have seen that Dr. Zweli Mkhize, our health minister, had been reported on as saying that there were just over 800 ICU beds in the public sector and about 160 in the private sector. But despite numerous attempts to contact both his spokesperson as well as the Department of Health, we have yet to get any feedback on them regarding these numbers. So we had to turn our search elsewhere.
Mm, what a pity, because the story is topical for the pandemic and they are communicating quite extensively on this pandemic, and it's a simple issue that they could have addressed. So where else did you turn to?
So we got lucky in some way. So there was a study that was done by Professor Alex van der Heerwe, and what he has done is on two occasions he has actually phoned hospitals around the country to ask them individually how many ICU beds they have.
Mm.
And one of the reasons he's done that is he says that this information isn't available everywhere. It isn't gathered every year. It isn't categorized. Mm. It isn't audited. It isn't released to the public. So you can't actually check it easily. So he wanted to try and get an estimate of the number of beds that were in the country.
Mm.
So the first time he did this was in 2013, and he looked at the public sector. So this information is quite old. We're looking at 7 years, but it does give us an idea of what we're dealing with. And mm-hmm. that year, he contacted 76 public hospitals, and he was able to estimate that there were 1,178 ICU beds in those facilities. If we fast forward to 2018, he did the same exercise in the private sector. Phew. And in that year, he phoned 204 private hospitals to get their numbers, and he estimated there were just over 2,000 ICU beds in those hospitals.
Mm.
So importantly, this data is in some cases a little bit old, in other cases very old, so the numbers could have changed.
Mm.
But it does show us that the number looks like it is significantly higher than this viral WhatsApp message claimed.
Yes.
The next thing we did was that we actually phoned Netcare, because they had been in the news recently saying that they were going to be making their ICU beds available to public healthcare sector patients who were diagnosed with coronavirus. And they confirmed to us just a few weeks ago that they had 1,200 beds available at the time in ICU. So that makes us think that the message that's doing the rounds certainly couldn't be accurate.
Yes, and this is one particular network of hospitals. You know, Netcare is one network, and they have about half of the 2018 ICU bed numbers of 2,140, just over half. So it's encouraging with the growing population from 2013, 2018, the numbers are not reversing. They are increasing, you know, from 1,178, as you said, to 2,140, and then one network with 1,200. Yeah, definitely.
Importantly, those 2 years, the first year was for the public healthcare sector and the second was for the private. So they don't feed onto each other. I think what this shows, though, is that we really need data on this for a number of reasons. One, any country, any researchers, universities, people working in the sector, we need to know how many beds we have which can provide ICU care. And secondly, I think in a situation like this, where you have a public and a country that is concerned about an outbreak of the novel coronavirus, we need to be told how many beds we have, what the resources are, so that we can be informed and have an idea of what our facilities can actually cope with.
Right. Oh, so the public sector beds are the figures from 2013, and we don't have a recent figure like we have with the private ICU beds numbers. Okay.
Yes, that's
correct. I get you now. So what is the conclusion then?
So luckily, this claim is incorrect. The data on ICU beds in the country is sparse, and unfortunately, the Department of Health wasn't able to respond to our requests where we asked for the most recent numbers.
Mm-hmm.
But luckily, the data shows that we have far more than 800 ICU beds. How many for sure? We can't be certain.
Yeah.
But hopefully the department can confirm this at some point so that we can put a firm stamp on exactly where we stand with regards to the number.
Yes, yes. And the intention of different provinces is to do this triage exercise with field hospitals so that there are beds for a potential explosion in numbers. So that's the ICU bed scenario. Thank you for that, for putting us potentially in the right area on this question. The second one has to do with the story that was a bit big last week about groceries, potentially buying groceries and they being infected with COVID-19 or with the virus being present on the packaging and on the food itself from the grocer if it came into contact with someone who's infected.
Absolutely. Did you get the voice note?
I didn't get the voice note, but I saw another.
You didn't?
I didn't get that one, but I saw a video of what looked like a news channel with the anchor and an expert discussing this question. And the expert was also saying, yeah, it's very possible you must wash your food and all of that. So that's the one I got, not the voice note.
So we got sent a voice note by someone who is on our WhatsApp line, and it was what sounds like a South African woman giving advice.
Mm.
And she says that she had been reliably informed that it's really important that when you go to the shops, When you come home, you need to soak all your cans and bottles that you buy in what she calls a strong solution of salt water and bleach. She says that you must wipe down boxes and packets with this mixture and that you must soak fruit and vegetables in salt water. And this, she says, is because you don't want to contract the virus by touching any of these goods when you're at the shops and then bringing it home.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we spoke to a number of people and we looked at leading advice on the topic. And I think it's important to say that theoretically, it is possible that you could contract the coronavirus by touching an infected surface like a can of beans or a bag of rice at the shops.
Yeah.
And then touching your face and having the virus be transmitted into your body that way. It's theoretically possible, but experts have also told us that the risk is actually extremely low. Mm-hmm. And if you look at existing advice from a number of different sources, if you look at advice from the World Health Organization, from the South African Department of Health, from a number of experts that we spoke to, they say that there have been no known cases where it's been recorded mm-hmm. that this is how somebody got sick, and that actually, the greatest risk that you face when you go to the shops is that you're in close contact and you're around other people.
Mm-hmm.
So what they advise is that we all keep doing what we've been told to do, and that is to regularly wash your hands. If you go to the shops and you get your groceries, it's important not to touch your face when you're at the shops. When you get home, unpack your groceries and then wash your hands. And while you're preparing food, you should also be regularly washing your hands. It's right. not necessary, according to experts, to go through the whole process of trying to disinfect all of your groceries.
Hmm. And we are going to be doing a Q&A with the Naked Scientist, right? And this question has come up about whether or not the virus can come to South Africa via things like cargo from China. I see that even on the NICD's website, Professor Cohen has done a video, in fact, addressing this matter. So I would trust sources rather like the NICD on matters like this. But what is clear, as you say, as the experts are saying, is that it is viable on different materials. The virus itself is viable on different materials for different ranges of time, like on stainless steel and plastics. Research says that it's viable for 72 hours. On things like copper, it's for 4 hours, and even in aerosols in the air, you know, it's viable for about 3 hours. So it's this one isn't completely left field, but it is important to also just be to think quite clearly, to think, use common sense, and not be overly panicked about this.
And I think it's also important that the advice that we are giving the public is also sort of broadly applicable. We have large sectors of our community that don't have access in many cases to tapped water on their premises.
Yeah.
And the water that they do have may be limited for drinking, for cooking, and for washing your hands. So good general broad advice is that you do just that. You wash your hands.
Mm-hmm.
You come into contact with anything that you're worried about. The first thing you do is you make sure you wash your hands and that you're keeping your hands clean and that you're avoiding touching your face. That is the best advice we have. Of course, if it brings you peace of mind to go through these extra steps, experts do caution that for the most part, it's probably safe to wipe down boxes and cans. But they said just to be careful with what you're using to wash fruit or vegetables because you don't want to leave anything on it that you could ingest.
Yeah, so did they say the salt solution, even using bleach, what was the conclusion on that? Because I imagine ingesting something like soap is not very good for you.
So it will depend on what you use. Just like when you wash your hands, depending on the substance that you use to wash your hands, it's going to have varying degrees of disinfecting power.
Mm-hmm.
What I think I would advise is I wouldn't want to speak to individual things that are safe or not, because it can vary according to what people have.
Mm-hmm.
But I think just follow good advice that you're getting about washing your hands, practicing cough etiquette. It's really the best thing that we can do to protect ourselves in a way that is easy to do and isn't overly onerous and doesn't make us do things that aren't necessarily going to make us any safer.
Right. So that is that. Let's get on to our third story, which has to do with gender-based violence in South Africa and a focus, of course, on the national lockdown. What was the claim?
So I don't know if we have the audio clip.
Yes, we do. Do you want to start with that?
Yes.
We can play Police Minister Peggy Cele and take a listen to this before we get into the detail.
A GBV violence is serious, no doubt about it. If I'm not mistaken, the last number we received from the report of the Nest Jones is that since it started, 87,000 people have phoned reporting that there might be a gender violence in the houses.
Right. So this one was clarified in the press a few weeks ago. But for anyone who hasn't heard further details on these, you know, they may be alarmed if this has gone viral or gone around. But just to give us the background there, Kate, and what exactly is problematic about the error that he made.
Yeah. So the reason that we took the time to clarify this and to publish a fact check of the statement by the minister was that this was a statement that was made at a press briefing where the minister stated that there were 87,000 calls or complaints to the police during the first week of the lockdown.
Mm.
And it was subsequently clarified by the police on numerous occasions that the minister misspoke in this instance and that actually over this period there were 2,300 calls or complaints to the police.
Mm-hmm.
The reason that we really feel the need to fact check this and to try to get accurate information out is that, unfortunately, the minister's original statement was published widely. There are still a number of online stories where this is the headline. And what we see time and time again is that once a number gets out there and is printed and given legitimacy, it keeps getting republished and reshared. So it's a claim that we can say is luckily incorrect, although the correct number doesn't give us much assurance, considering it's also quite a significant figure.
Yes. Yeah, so the figure that he cited, the 87,000, was from the previous financial year, right? From the crime stats of the previous financial year.
Yeah. So that was the number of cases that he says were reported to the police of gender-based violence in the previous financial year.
Mm-hmm.
But what we also did was we actually pulled the statistics for the 2018-19 financial year.
Mm-hmm.
And we spoke to the police and we asked exactly what they considered to be gender-based violence. And they said that it was all contact crimes against women.
Right.
So if we look at the figures for that year, we see that the number of contact crimes against women was just under 180,000 that were reported and recorded by the police. And that includes a number of different things. It includes just under 83,000 cases of common assault, just over 2,700 cases of murder, and just over 36,000 cases of sexual offense. Importantly, the numbers that were shared by the minister are yet to be verified, but later when they are audited and they're released, we'll be able to look back at this financial year and see where we stand.
And I hope that this particular article is pretty high on the search results, Kate, because yes, this article, gives further details to the error and the correction, and it just adds more to the story in terms of numbers and our understanding of what's happening in South Africa. But it also needs to be seen that so that the 87,000 does not become the as you said, the number that sticks, but rather that it's always close by so that that correction can be seen almost immediately. So I'm hoping that your keyword search, the keywords that you focus on as Africa Check, help it to float it to as far to the top as possible.
We hope so too. And part of our work is we have a team of fact checkers across the continent that does the work of fact checking, but we also have a team that works on impact. And that is trying to make sure that our fact checks and the work that we do actually result in more accuracy. And part of that is actually reaching out to publications, newspapers, media houses who have published an incorrect statistic or something which was later found not to be the case to try and get them to update it, to state that the number was incorrect so that we can really try and not just publish the facts, but see them actually change the narrative when it's wrong.
Precisely. Thank you for this, Kate. We'll see you again in another 2 weeks. And by then, we could be, what, in the final week of lockdown?
Yeah.
In the final,
we'll have to wait and see.
If it does not get extended. Let's see. We all take it day by day. Thank you very much.
Cheers, Azza.
That is Kate Wilkinson, the deputy editor for Africa Check. It is. It's day by day. You know, regulations here today, regulations relaxed tomorrow. Who knows what things will be like, what the picture will be like tomorrow. But what we must never lose, of course, is our focus and hope.